Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today. It's that time of year when the divisions are decided, the champions are crowned, and legends are born. It's the NFL playoffs. You've waited and watched all year as your team rose to the top or fell to the bottom, but now it's your turn to win big. You've heard the name just about everywhere, MyBookie. They're the industry-leading online sportsbook and casino, and it's not hard to understand why. With thousands of lines to bet on all your favorite sports, NFL, NBA, and college ball, MMA and soccer, they've got them all. The latest odds, period. Take advantage of MyBookie's prop builder and live in-game betting where every single run, throw, and touchdown is another chance for you to put cash in your pocket. Visit their mobile-friendly website today and get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. Just use the promo code 3YARDS, that's the word 3YARDS, when you make your first deposit. The best part is they make it simple with a variety of ways to deposit instantly, including credit card, bank transfer, Bitcoin, and more. Whether you're at home or on the go, on your laptop or on your phone, it's not too late to make your New Year's resolution a resolution to get paid. Bet, win, and get paid at MyBookie.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry, an off-season edition, as it were. Season's going on, but Dolphins are not participating. I'm Alfredo Arteaga, Simon Clancy is here, Chris Kaufman is here, and we're going to get into the offensive side of the ball on this episode, and we're going to talk about the promotion of Lemuel Jean-Pierre, Lemuel Jean-Pierre.
I'd say let's get his name right before we start.
Yes.
Speaking him up.
Lemuel Jean-Pierre.
The least we can do.
Yeah, let's get his name right. Is it Lemuel or Lemuel?
I think it's Lemuel.
I can't find it anywhere where it says how to pronounce his name.
I mean, I'd imagine it's Lemuel Jean-Pierre.
Yeah. Lemuel Jean-Pierre.
Well, Simon's European, so we'll go with that.
I mean, he's of Haitian descent, so I can't really help you there. So, kind of last time I checked, Haiti wasn't in Europe.
It's not?
Astonishingly, no.
Really?
Yeah.
You learn something new every
okay.
day.
It's pronounced Lemuel Jean-Pierre.
Okay.
Lemuel Jean-Pierre.
All right. The promotion of Lemuel Jean-Pierre. Is that correct, Simon?
Yes.
Beautiful. We're going to talk about that and much, much more. But before we do that, Simon, any new adventures with the fine products at Manscaped?
I still haven't had the thing from you, so this is very difficult to talk about. But what? Apparently the aftershave is very good. So yeah, if you're not smelling good,
yeah, the aftershave,
that could help.
Yes, the aftershave.
We don't get it over here. But yeah.
The aftershave your balls? Like,
I mean, you could do.
I guess you could.
Yeah.
Boy, that. Oof.
That's quite a lot to take on board for everyone.
It is. I think that's a lot.
Also, don't get a paper cut.
Oh, that would sting. That's what I'm saying. Like, you shave your balls, like, there could be consequences using aftershave on there.
Yeah. Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah, but ball toner, ball deodorant, and of course their new fragrance. Everything you could get.
Isn't
it on
ball toner? Isn't that a Korn song?
Huh? I mean, you'd know.
That's a great question, right?
Looking that up.
Ball toner is actually would be a great name for a band.
It wouldn't. I wouldn't.
Oh no, it's ball tongue. My bad.
Oh. Yes, you get all their products at manscaped.com, of course.
They've also got another song called Jingle Balls.
Do they?
You combine the, yeah, you combine the two.
Ah.
Use the promo code 5RSN, 20%
Jingle
off
toner?
Your order.
Jingle toner. Jiggle toner.
Jiggle toner.
Jiggle toner. I like that.
Mm.
Well, they've promoted a man to... to be offensive line coach.
We're not going to say his name anymore. He's just a man.
Lemuel Jean-Pierre.
Random,
how's that?
Random man. Random man has just been promoted to be the offensive line coach of the Miami Dolphins.
And what does that mean for as far as the offensive coordinator position? Because it doesn't seem like they really cared too much to go elsewhere. Has to mean that they already have their guy picked out and it's probably in-house. No? Simon?
I would suspect so, given that all the good candidates have now just completely disappeared and we're left with, you know, the not good candidates, certainly externally, which would be Pep Hamilton, which literally nobody wants. So, yeah, I would imagine it will be, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was Studsville, but I think it will be George Godsey. So, you know, the interesting thing about Studsville is that he's so highly rated, it wouldn't surprise me if he leaves next year. You know, he might get an OC job next year somewhere else. You know, I can't suddenly see the Dolphins. I mean, they might, but God, 6 OCs in 6 years would be pretty drastic. 5 in 5 is pretty bad, but 6 in 6 would be pretty rubbish. And you could see him getting, lured away next year.
I think if it's in house, I think it's Studsville, not Godson.
Do you?
Yeah, I think he's got the assistant head coach title. It'd be somewhat of a bypass, I think, you know, to have Godsey go above him. After Brian Flores talked him up as being a future coordinator, you know, and I don't, people can say what they want about this, but it does seem to me like the Dolphins are trying to give a leg up with these hires, with some of these hires to not a leg up, but I mean, they're trying to interview and potentially hire people of color. And you know, I think Godsey is lower on the totem pole than Eric Studsville. And if he gets promoted above him, you know, that might be a bad look. And I just think that Flores has already talked him up so much that if it's an internal guy, Studsville is probably in line before Godsey. And Godsey is such a good friend of Flores's anyway. I don't know that he would mind that much. But the other thing is, I don't know. Do we know it's an internal guy just because they promoted Lemuel? They might know who it is, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's an internal guy. Why haven't they done it if it's an internal guy? You know, all the other guys are taken up, right? And we've seen them go down one by one. We saw Matt Canada is supposedly being promoted in Pittsburgh. We see Mike McDaniel is being promoted in San Francisco. Tony Elliott has politely declined and decided to stay at Clemson. And you know, Pep Hamilton is still hanging out there. But I mean, if they know if all these guys are getting hired out and are getting promoted and taken off the board and they're ready to go with an internal guy, why haven't they done that yet? You know, it looks to me like they're waiting for somebody, to get out of the playoffs.
An NFL Rumors and Updates Twitter account with 8,000 followers has just tweeted that the Dolphins have 2 finalists per report, and I can't find the report, for the OC job, running back coach Eric Studsfield and Chargers quarterback coach Pep Hamilton. So you take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. And we'll see where that goes. But I think that I'm not excited about. I've made no secret that I'm not excited about Pep Hamilton. But I think that as things stand, if they're not waiting for somebody in the playoffs right now, then it's probably those two guys. But I think the Lemuel Jean-Pierre thing is interesting, you know, for a number of reasons, because he's a Tom Cable guy, like holy. Mm-hmm. He played for Tom Cable for 5 years. He went off to another team for 1 year and then hung up his cleats and decided to go into coaching and immediately went back to Tom Cable as his assistant. Then followed Tom Cable from Seattle to the Raiders, to be his assistant there, and came over to Miami. You know, it's interesting. Why did he come over to Miami? I think the more we see in this, I think that Colorado just totally screwed Brian Flores over by hiring Carl Durrell, because so much orbits around Carl Durrell in terms of the Chan Gailey hire, and in terms of, who was Carl Durrell's offensive coordinator at UCLA? Tom Cable. and so why is Lemuel Jean-Pierre here? To me, I think we all knew that Chan Gailey was sort of a rental, right? I mean, he came out of retirement. He's here for maybe a year, maybe two. Steve Marshall just kind of goes where he goes, and you know, he's not young either. It kind of struck me as those two being rentals, and maybe Carl Durrell was supposed to take over for Chan Gailey and Lemuel Jean-Pierre was supposed to take over for Steve Marshall. And the latter has happened. But then, I mean, remember that Carl Durrell was promoted to assistant head coach on February 20th when Jean-Pierre was hired. And then all of a sudden, even people at Colorado are like, whoa, Carl Durrell, really? And you know, that's what happened. I think that kind of screwed them, but it's just more evidence that they're heading toward this zone style system. If you look at all the candidates that they're interviewing for OC, I mean, that's where this is heading. And so I think it's interesting.
I think they're trying to build a run game, which is why I think they'll keep Studsville as the head coach. I think that's what they're going to look to do, because you look at Mike McDaniel, for example, you know, run game coordinator at the 49ers, a guy everybody touted. You know, it would intimate to me there are certain candidates who respected the run, and I think that's just something they wanted to do. And you know, you look at the news tonight that Najee Harris is going to be on the Dolphins roster at the Senior Bowl. You know, I'm sure that's not an accident that Jim Nagy just put certainly my number one running back in the draft with the Dolphins, given the need at running back and three picks in the top 36 picks. So be very interesting.
Yeah, and you know, Pep Hamilton, for he's those experiences as coaching quarterbacks, as an offensive coordinator, he's very much a run guy, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he comes from Stanford with under Jim Harbaugh and with David Shaw, and you know, I think that he's very much a run priority guy. I think Matt Canada is a run priority guy. I think Mike McDaniel is certainly a, you know, fix the run game with the Shanahan style run zone run game guy. Eric Studsville, clearly a run guy. Just the whole set of OCs, OC candidates was filled with that. I mean, the themes were run and the themes were zone. I mean, that's the direction we're heading. And I think Lemuel Jean-Pierre fits that pretty well.
If we're going by what happened last year, aren't we overdue by a week already? Was Chan Gailey already hired by now? I believe he was, right?
This time last year, yesterday.
Oh, okay. So it's just a day older. All right. Yeah. So yeah, we're not overdue. So it should come down sometime before the Senior Bowl, I would guess.
Yeah, you kind of feel like they're going to want to take a new OC to the Senior Bowl. It would be
Yeah, it would be
not to.
Yeah, optimal. All right, let's get into this roster, because the more I watch these teams in the NFL, the more confused I become of this roster, because I don't see what these teams have and what they had this past weekend on at least the offensive side of the ball. I think the cupboard is pretty bare, but we're going to get into it. And let's start at quarterback. Simon, do you see a scenario where Ryan Fitzpatrick is back here next year, or they're going to go elsewhere?
Doesn't look like it's trending that way, does it?
No.
You know, we've not had any comment as to what he's going to do. He's a free agent. I think everybody would like to see him back, but I still think he's rattled. I still think he's hurt by what happened and the way he was sort of ousted. You know, and then to come back in and beat the Raiders only to be, you know, to go down with COVID and miss the final game, even though, you know, Flores had already said that Tua was the guy. So, no, I don't necessarily think he'll be back. And I think the Dolphins will be in the market for, you know, an experienced backup and probably, you know, they'll probably take a long, hard look at a rookie quarterback as well. And I suspect on day three, they'll certainly take a passer to sort of bring into the mix.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Chris, do you see a scenario where Ryan Fitzpatrick is back, or are they just going to go in the garbage bin and try to get a facsimile thereof?
It's tough to say, because if Ryan Fitzpatrick wants to be back, which I think is the big question, because he's quite infamous for saying he plays this game to start. You know, he doesn't play this game to be a backup. And he came to the Miami Dolphins in the first place because he had a legit chance at starting. And he will not have that if he comes back next year, because they have said that Tua Tagovailoa is our starter. So he may not want to be back. So it may not be in Miami's hands at all. The real interesting question to me is, what if he does indicate that he wants to be back? Because, you know, say what you want about, you know, what does it do to Tua's psyche and stuff like that, always having Ryan Fitzpatrick hanging over his head like he's going to bail out the game. If Tua is the quarterback that we all hoped he would be, then that won't matter. And Ryan Fitzpatrick gets along with these coaches. You know, it's not just Chan Gailey, it's everybody. I mean, Flores loves him, and he loves Flores. So it would be a really interesting question if that happened, if Fitzpatrick indicated that he would come back to Miami as a backup. Otherwise, I think that we are, I don't want to say that it's going to be the draft, because your intuition tells you that they're going to want an experience in the room with Tua, not another rookie, right?
Hmm.
Who is that though? Maybe you've got a name or two, Alf. I don't know.
Well, I heard something really interesting, but you know, I'll save that for a free agency show. I don't know if he's going to shake loose, but you guys can guess. But if we go back a year, just a year, when Ryan Fitzpatrick was brought in, the guy that they also looked at was Josh McCown. He has since retired. I don't know of any other old guys that are out there that would fit that mold as far as like a mentor to Tua Tagovailoa. Mm-hmm. I think now he's going to want somebody to bounce ideas off of, and not necessarily somebody to actually hold his hand for an entire season. Simon, is there, in the back of your mind, do you think that bringing Ryan Fitzpatrick back, let's say he contacts Brian Flores and says, you know what, I want to be back next year, and I want to be back, and I'm the backup, and it's Tua's team, and I understand that. Is there a scenario where you think to yourself, you know what, this is nice, but I don't want him back, because it could start creating some of these narratives again, especially within the four walls that, well, it's not going to be Davey anymore, it's going to be Miramar from now on. So we already saw what that did. Is there a scenario where you say, you know what, that's nice, but enjoy your life somewhere else, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, because the only person that can really combat the narratives is the person that needs to play better, which is the quarterback, which is Tua. You know, but it's going to be uncomfortable knowing that, you know, the people have, on the team have spoken out against you and in favor of the guy that's backing you up. People outside the building have spoken up, the media. You know, we've talked about how Tua ignores that stuff, and I'm sure he does. But, you know, some of that will have filtered through, I'm sure. So, yeah, it's probably an uncomfortable narrative, but I think it's one that the Dolphins would embrace because he's a good player, he's a great person, and I think he probably helps, you know, in a lot of departments around the building. But I do think it would make for an uncomfortable, I mean, I think we're probably going to have an uncomfortable spring and summer anyway, but I think it would make for an even more uncomfortable one. Through no fault of Fitz's, no fault of his own, you know, it's not his problem. That's just the way that the cookie has crumbled.
Chris, would you do that as well, or is that something you would say, you know what, you know, stop being a baby about it, compete, if it does mean compete, and just own the job, you know, instead of, you know, worrying about what other people think, worry about yourself, take the job, and don't let Ryan Fitzpatrick off the bench for an entire season.
You know, normally I would just say, you know, step up and, you know, I'm not going to baby you. And if you want to be better to Tua, that's what I would head. But I think Miami is just crazy. It's just, I mean, and I mean the whole city, the fans, the players, the owner, the media, especially, are crazy about this quarterback position. I think that it has been such a source of curse that they have been driven completely mad, completely insane. And what it's doing is it's leading to bad decisions. And so you have, you know, back in the day, you had, according to Omar Kelly, you had players on the team. And I very much believe this. I don't think he's making this up. Players on the team that are, you know, trying to get Joe Philbin to start Matt Moore over Ryan Tannehill. Well, Ryan Tannehill goes somewhere else. What's happening? He's performing like a top 10 quarterback in this league, if not top five. Mm-hmm. You know, and I look at what's happened this offseason with the whole, you know, guy speaking out anonymously. I mean, this is not, there's a difference between off the record and on the record, but anonymous, right? And these guys knew what the fuck they were doing when they decided to be on the record but anonymous. And I think it's really just the whole goddamn town being mad, including the owner, putting pressure on everybody to fix the. Why did we hire Adam Gase?
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback position. Because he happened to be there when Peyton Manning was Peyton Manning, right? Why did we hire Joe Philbin? Quarterback position. Because he happened to be there when Aaron Rodgers was Aaron Rodgers. He was picking
up garbage on the locker room floor while Aaron Rodgers was walking around.
He was the PowerPoint guy, basically. So we do all this shit, you know, hiring guys, putting pressure in all the wrong places, in order to get this quarterback position right, because we're mad about it and we're cursed because of it. We're cursed because of that desperation. And so we just keep making bad decision after bad decision. You know, first it's a bad decision to draft Ryan Tannehill, and then it's a bad decision to get rid of him because now he's a fucking elite quarterback. I mean, now we get Tua Tagovailoa, and, you know, we're about to keep benching him for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and everybody and all the players are like, yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know? And it's like, we're just cursed at this position. And I think it comes from this angst, this collective angst that happens in the city, in the fans, in the media. It bleeds into the players. It bleeds into the owner himself, because let's face it, the owner is a fan. Mm-hmm. But he's just a fan with more power that signs the checks. So, you know, I want it because of that. I don't trust anybody with a difficult situation. So, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to simplify it. I'm going to get Ryan Fitzpatrick out of here. Because y'all can't be trusted. That's my take.
You know what? I'm kind of with you. But then that's going to start another narrative, which is, okay, now they're babying Tua by getting rid of his competition.
Well, but not really, because if he's not too good, and we're, you know, less than halfway through the season, and the Deshaun Watson thing is still stretching out, you know, get the fuck on the horn and see what that price is. I don't care. I just want the quarterback position fixed. But I don't trust anybody. I don't trust anybody to be making good decisions about it, because we're all driven so fucking crazy.
Yeah, and I don't know whatever happened to good old patience, and let's wait for things to play out, you know?
Yeah.
But you gotta figure this Deshaun Watson thing is not gonna happen soon. I would say it's gonna go into free agency.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they hire Eric Bieniemy, because this has happened before. Okay. I know it's happened in other sports, but the last, you know, superstar that caused a stink about his head coach was LeBron James in Cleveland. They hired Byron Scott. 2 weeks later, he was in Miami. Okay. So, you know, that's happened all the time. So I think even if they hire Eric Bieniemy, it's probably not the end of it. So it'll stretch into free agency into March. Right before the draft, I think, is the drop dead date, because that's when everybody has to evaluate their assets. And I'm pretty sure if Houston's going to trade Watson this year, they're going to want a lot of stuff from this year, because they're going to have to get they're going to want a head start on rebuilding that team from the ground up. Now, talking about rebuilding from the ground up, moving on to the running back position. Simon, I told you the other day that I felt like, you know, keep Gaskin, keep Ahmed, and then tell everybody else, you know, go away. But Matt Breida's a free agent. He's obviously never getting another call from this coaching staff, because they obviously just hate him. So let's talk about the two free agents. Matt Breida, DeAndre Washington, any interest whatsoever in bringing either of them back?
I mean, I like Breida, but it's clear that the Dolphins don't. So
yeah,
what's the point in sticking him, you know, keeping him around, because they clearly don't fancy him very much. You know, he seemed to pick up yards in decent chunks, and then all of a sudden you never see him again, or
inactive the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it seemed kind of pointless. So, you know, what's the point? Just let him go, frankly. I think, you know, you keep the two satellite backs around. I thought they showed good value, but it's clear they want the thumper, a guy who can, you know, carry 15, 18, 22 times a game, catch a few balls out of the backfield, can essentially work in all three areas of the game, pass protection as well. For me, that's either Harris or Williams. I actually think Etienne, as good as he is, probably fits a bit more like what they already have in terms of size and, you know, traits. Obviously better than Ahmed and Gaskin, but, you know, you have to ask whether Travis Etienne can carry a full load in the NFL. So it'll be interesting, but I think, you know, it'll be one of those two guys, I think, early. But if they, you know, if they ignore that and they, you know, they look at backs later on, well, then that opens up a, you know, a whole different thing. But if we're targeting early round running backs, then, you know, for me, they're the two guys. You know, after that, you're looking at, you know, a Trey Sermon who's coming off an injury, Kylan Hill, who sat out the year, Kenny Gainwell's 191 pounds. Chuba Hubbard is, you know, 201 pounds, but coming off a big injury. Obviously, we all like Brian Robinson at Alabama if he comes out. Mm-hmm. You're looking at, you know, Jamal Jefferson, who most people on the East Coast don't know anything about, because West Coast games don't seem to kick off at about 4 a.m. you know, Mo Ibrahim.
I like the Marshall kid, Brendan. Knox.
Yeah, Knox. Elijah Mitchell at Louisiana is a good big back at 218 pounds, you know. So doesn't Larry, you know, Larry Roundtree at Missouri is a good player. So they're coaching Ramondre Stevenson, who's probably going to be
the Georgia kid. His name is
Zamir White.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's had injuries, but he's noticeable every time he plays.
Yeah. You know, I think they probably ignore the satellite backs, the Javion Hawkins and the Demetric Feltons, because I think they're just too alike to the guys they already have. So that for me would be the play.
So although Chris, I could see them going, I mean, they have, so think about this though, the guys they have, I mean, if you want guys like that, if you want guys that small, don't you want them fast and dangerous in the pass game, you know? Mm-hmm. And in that, so in that respect, you know, they could be after that type. They could be after a Travis Etienne because of what his speed can do in the passing game. They could be after a Michael Carter, you know, with North Carolina, because, you know, not only was he an equal load carrier with Javonte Williams, but, you know, he was the pass catching guy too. And, you know, he's a really good third down. You know, they're going to try and surround Tua with players that I think can catch the ball and help him. And I don't think they're done at the running back position with respect to that third down back type, just because they have guys that are not so big in Miles Gaskin and Savon Ahmed. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it's all types. I think it's all types.
Yeah,
that brings in, you know, Hawkins has had, 19 runs of 20-plus yards in 2019, certainly. You look at someone like Puka Williams, scored every 4.3 times he touched the ball. You know, elusive. You know, that's, if you're looking for a Tariq Cohen, Naheem Hines kind of good runner with good hands out of the backfield, you know, Puka Williams, and the fact that he's got no toes on his right feet is intriguing in itself. His cousin ran them over with a lawnmower. Imagine that.
Jeez.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, but the last time that happened to a Dolphin, that was a good thing. Tim Bowens, remember?
Yeah.
Tim Bowens only had 7 toes.
Yeah.
Good knowledge.
Yeah. So back to that, I had a stat on the 3YPC account, which I found interesting because of how pathetic it was. The Dolphins had 24 touchdown passes. 16 of them were thrown into the end zone, which means that only 8 of them had any yak. Of those 8 had a combined yak of 87 yards. 52 of them came on one play, and that was the play by Miles Gaskin against the Raiders. So making something out of nothing is not something that this group did. So yeah, it's the cupboard's bare there at running back, I would say. Is this the end of Patrick Laird as well? So,
yeah, it feels like it.
Yeah,
I'm curious what they would think about just getting into prospects about somebody like a Trey Smith. Remember, he used to play for, it was Oklahoma, right? And he went off to, I'm thinking of Trey Sermon. Okay.
Yeah.
Has Trey Smith always been Wyoming? No, he hasn't always been Wyoming because he used to play against Bama and, you know, Florida State. And where did he transfer from?
Not sure, but the Oklahoma kid is Trey Sermon.
Yeah, the Oklahoma kid is Trey Sermon.
Yeah, I would also think that as far as the running back group, maybe an introduction to the group from maybe Malcolm Perry.
Oh, he's makes the Louisville a lot of guy. Sense. That's right.
That's right. Yeah.
Of course, we're not doing that with Lynn Bowden because Lynn Bowden famously didn't like it when he was in Las Vegas and they tried to make him a running back. But Malcolm Perry, maybe.
Maybe.
He did it in training camp. I don't know why that disappeared all of a sudden.
The fact he didn't do it in the season would make me wonder if they really, you know, because if you're going to do it when it matters. And they didn't. Mm-hmm. So
now
I would look for a whole reset there personally at that position. I mean, yeah, you might keep Miles Gaskin and sure you're going to invite both Miles Gaskin and Savon Ahmed to the training camp because why wouldn't you? Right. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean their spot's secure. And I would probably look for them, especially if somebody like Studsville is getting the call up. You know, they're going to ask him. He's got more responsibility now on the offense. They're going to ask him to start making some calls on prospects and get involved there. And I think that they're because he was involved with, you know, the draft class last year, and they just didn't they completely ignored him.
Yeah,
they didn't get anybody. Right.
Supposedly he pounded the table for J.K. Dobbins and Jonathan Taylor, which suggests, you know, hey, you know, nice look there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah, they completely ignored him.
So I think you know, two new guys, two new significant guys at least.
Yeah. It was also odd that on the day that they were interviewing guys at the combine, Eric Studsville spoke to J.K. Dobbins. Somebody timed it for 2 hours, and then J.K. Dobbins announced he wasn't going to work out. So everybody speculated, okay, the Dolphins earmarked the pick for him. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they passed on him twice. So, interesting. Yeah, I completely agree with you. A reset at the running back position. And if they really shit-canned every single one of these guys, you know, it would surprise me, especially on Myles Gaskin, because I think he was productive for what he did this year. But, you know, like, really, who cares? This was not a very, very good group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah,
they're really... They'll be back for camp, but and everything. And they'll probably, if they're this good,
yeah,
then they'll win. You know, they'll win the roster spots. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't stop them from getting two new guys.
Yeah, and I don't understand really, back to Matt Breda, I really don't understand what happened there. He had his moments against the Patriots. He had his best game in the Dolphin uniform, 87 yards. They made him inactive the next 2 weeks. Healthy scratches in the next 2 weeks. So who knows what's going on with Matt Breda, but it's obviously he won't be on this team next year. Moving on to tight ends, a highly productive group, but we kind of have some ideas. That group had over 1,000 yards, 13 touchdowns. Obviously, they're productive. Obviously, Mike Gesicki, Durham Smythe, Adam Shaheen, all three capable players, all three guys played well. But do you foresee a significant upgrade, Simon?
I think it depends who's on the market, frankly. I mean,
maybe a guy from Florida.
Maybe the kid from Florida, because he's special.
Yes.
We've been talking him up on this podcast for a few months for good reason. You know, Gesicki had a great year, played really well. He's a good player. But Kyle Pitts is different. You know, he's a different category of player altogether. You know, he's probably one of the top. We were talking about it on WhatsApp earlier on. He was one of the top six or seven players in this entire draft. You know, he's an elite pass-catching tight end, a move tight end, great campaign. I mean, he was a finalist for the Biletnikoff Award, and he's a tight end. I mean, that mm-hmm. pretty much tells you everything you need to know. You know, he dictates the coverage. You know, just a great mismatch player, just so quick off the line, just beats the jam, looks the ball in through contact, makes a tough catch. He's, you know, he's Darren Waller. He's a massive red zone threat. The Dolphins are terrible red zone. I think he had nine of 13 catches went for touchdowns in the red zone. You know, he's not going to be a fit for every offense, but he's just got a great feel for space, and he's a significantly better blocker than he's given credit for. You know, Chris is dealing some videos of Malik Herring and stuff, you know, 6'6", 280-pound Georgia defensive end, and he's handling him one-on-one. You know, people say Kyle Pitts can't block. Well, you know, Kyle Pitts can block. He can run. He can catch. He's a special player. So, you know, the Dolphins don't need a tight end, but hell, you know, you don't pass that up. You don't pass up a red zone yak monster who can, but, you know, the game's all about mismatches. You know, you can get Kyle Pitts in the building. There's all of a sudden you've got a Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez without the serial killer element. You know, and this is certain members of the coaching staff were there in New England when they were drafted together, let alone when they played together. So it just, that just opens the door for so many opportunities in a mismatch league.
I think he's Tony Gonzalez. I think he's going to be an iconic player in the NFL. He's probably the best tight end I've ever taken a look at. Best tight end prospect I've ever taken a look at. And I don't say that lightly. You know, it's not just, listen, we've seen a lot of tight ends that have athleticism, right? We Mike Gesicki, we've seen other ones that, you know, go back a ways. You see Kobe Fleener, guys that can run. You know, it's clear they've got the dimensions, right? They're tall, they're big, and they can run, you know, and that's usually enough for the NFL, right? To try and go after the guy. This is a guy that can run and that has that set of sort of athleticism, but he can also shake. And that's what's really so interesting about him as a receiver. He really moves like a wide receiver, and not on a straight line basis, because there's some wide receivers that are straight line-ish. you know, he's not at all that, you know, he's, it's just, it's really unique to watch him, how he gets open against, against DBs, including some of the best cornerbacks in college football. You know, they go out and face him like he's a wide receiver. And I've only seen two guys go up and consistently beat JC Horn, and they're Devonta Smith and Kyle Pitts. So, you know, what he can do as a wide receiver is just unique. But what's so unique, he's a goddamn unicorn. And as you alluded to, and the blocking tape on him in this year in 2020 is really, really good. It's really compelling. He gets in line and he, you know, he keeps his hands inside, and this is an effort thing. I mean, how, I don't know how many tight ends I've seen. They just, you know, they're kind of in there and, you know, they're trying, but they're not sticking with the blocks. And, you know, it's really, you know, they fall off or they move straight lines, you know, and it's, that's not him. Like he is 100% effort. He is moving his feet. He's keeping his hands in. He's using his strength. And that's how you get him blocking these 280 pound defensive ends singly, you know, as an inline tight end, and he's doing well with it. You know, he's doing as well as you see some blocking specialists do.
Yeah, another thing that I noticed about Kyle Pitts, as I've been watching him this week, he understands leverage when he's blocking, okay? And that's not something that a lot of tight ends do. What a lot of tight ends like to do is get their hands on their guy and just follow him wherever he goes. He seems to understand where his guy wants to go and seems to understand the blocking game. So he's a complete prospect. And I heard somebody say this, and I haven't verified it because I would have to start digging through drafts. I remember TJ Hockenson was pretty well thought of. But I heard somebody say that he was the best prospect since Jeremy Shockey at tight end. And that's a hell of a call. Simon, your thoughts on that? Is that crazy, or are we in the neighborhood?
I think Vernon Davis, you know, that's another name that springs to mind when you think about what he can do with the ball. I mean, Chris talked about the unicorn. I mean, that's literally what he's nicknamed at Florida by his coaches, is the unicorn, because his talent is so rare. You know, and I think ultimately, you kind of, you know, the blocking is good. What you really want to focus on is what he does best, and that is just defeating press. That's defeating corners, safeties, tight ends, and making catch after catch after catch all over the field. Because I think that's where he's going to shine. I think he's going to be just an elite player very quickly in this league. And I think he'd be a real help for Tua.
All right. And to tie
up, I don't just say this because it's a cliche, though. I don't say this because it's a cliche, but his ability as a blocker is going to make him all the more dangerous as a pass catcher. In my opinion, because of how he can be used and what, you know, what downs he can be used and stuff like that. I mean, it's what it does to the personnel game on the defensive side of the ball. That's what I think is so compelling about him. And I don't think he's limited to certain kinds of schemes. In fact, I think if you're had Mike McDaniels taken the job in Miami from San Francisco, you would think, if that were really the case, if you're going to a Shanahan style system, you could argue that, you know, Mike Gesicki's not the greatest fit for that. Right. And you'd want more of a George Kittle type of player. The reason it's such a big deal that Kyle Pitts is the unicorn with what he can do in the blocking game, understanding leverage, being a dog, you know, is because he can fit that scheme. And that could make him, you know, a consistent 1,000-yard receiver, while also helping your offense be, you know, just one of the best, you know, in the league. And if you get a chance at that at the right price, I'm not above trading Mike Gesicki. I like him, but I'll just say it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. All right, I completely agree with you. Like, I would trade, like, if I could get a second, if I can get myself Kyle Pitts. Now at 18, I don't know. It's going to be tough. We've already seen TJ Hockenson, OJ Howard. Teams tend to figure out, okay, this is a special talent at tight end, where there's so few of them, and they'll overdraft. I don't think it's overdrafting to say that Kyle Pitts could go in the top 10 because it's happened before. So I don't know about 18, but if it costs you Mike Gesicki and 18 to get into the top 10,
what happened at 18?
You know, would you do it? If it costs you Mike Gesicki to move up to get him, would you do it?
Well, that's a fair question. That's a fair question. I think it probably comes more into frame if the Dolphins do decide to trade down from number 3. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
have more ammo.
Smith is no longer on the board because you traded down.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I struggle to think of a player. I struggle more attractive just as a player than, you know, once Trevor Lawrence and Devonta Smith are off the board, I struggle to think of anybody I'd rather have just as a player than Kyle Pitts.
Mm. Yeah, I tend to agree. Overall, Simon, this is a good group, right? Like, you don't mind if they come back intact, or are you looking for an upgrade somewhere in there?
No, it's a solid group. The Shaheen and Smythe can block. They're useful in the pass game. They're good special teamers, good guys. So, no, it's a decent group.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now we're going to go on to a group that's not so good. And got to give credit where it's due. Simon said it in there was no preseason, but before the season, Simon said, you know, this group might not be as good as we think it's going to be. After the opt-outs, I felt like, okay, they take one injury, and we kind of all agreed on this. They take one major injury to Preston Williams or Devontae Parker, and this group is absolutely horrid. Turned out, Simon was kind of correct. This group was not that good to begin with, even with the opt-outs, because, you know, they just didn't play. Now, Albert Wilson is coming back. Is that something you would entertain, Simon? Would you like Albert Wilson back on the team?
Yeah, I think the entire position is up for grabs. I don't think anybody is particularly safe. You know, Parker probably is. But look, you know, Devontae, I mean, I said it a few weeks ago, or even in the preseason, that he wasn't elite. He was a good receiver. I got loads of shit from it on social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people going, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, the guy isn't elite. He's a good player. He's not an elite wide receiver. And anybody thinks he's an elite wide receiver is a clown, frankly. Doesn't know what they're talking about.
He's a good wide receiver that had one elite year.
Yeah, he's a good receiver. He's not a great receiver.
No.
You know, Preston Williams is nice, but, you know, he struggles with separation. He struggles with drops and concentration, and he gets hurt all the time. He's played 20 games, and he's been active for he's played in 10 games, essentially in 2 seasons, which doesn't really say an awful lot about his potential longevity.
It's Grant, interesting. Everybody talks about Devontae Parker's availability. Preston Williams has already missed more games in 2 years than Devontae Parker has missed in 5.
Exactly. I think Preston, if he's healthy, is better. It could even be better than Devontae Parker, though. I mean, the thing you mentioned that's right on the nose, I think, is the drops and the lapses in concentration, which he's got to get out of his game, because we've seen with other guys how that can prevent you from, you know, reaching your potential. But he gets open more easily than Devontae Parker does by a good amount.
And the rest really are just, you know, Jakeem Grant, just a guy, you know, just is not reliable. I like Lynn Bowden. I think Lynn Bowden's a keeper. I like Malcolm Perry, but, you know, let's not beat around the bush. You know, he's kind of bottom third of the roster kind of guy. He's probably going to have to show more on special teams to stick around. So I think, you know, a rebuild of the position, it's not worked for years. So a rebuild of the position needs to happen. You know, whether that comes in free agency, you know, there's a lot of names out there. And obviously the big names, the Golladays, the Chris Godwins are almost certainly going to be re-signed. But, you know, you look at Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, Pittsburgh are significantly over the cap. That's not going to happen. He will hit the free agent market. You know, who else is out there? You look at, you know, Nelson Agholor, for example, has had a really good season. You know, a guy obviously has been plagued with drops throughout his career, but, you know, a good player, has had an excellent year with the Raiders. Marvin Jones is a guy, you know, we've talked about
begging to be here.
Brings Tim Patrick at Denver is a decent receiver. You look at somebody else like I mean, Allen Robinson, you asked whether or not he fits. Does he fit coming back home to Miami? Is he the same player as Parker and Williams, you know, of a size profile? He's not overly twitchy, but he moves the, you know, he moves the needle. He moves the chains. Curtis Samuel, obviously very intriguing kind of player. Isaiah McKenzie killed us in week 17. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got skills. These are all free agent guys. So, you know, and then the draft. I mean, you know, what don't the Dolphins do? The Dolphins do not create yak. They do not have yards, consistent yards after the catch, guys.
None.
You know, you look at Devonta Smith, 500 more yards after catch over the last 3 years than anybody else in college football. I mean, that in itself. Jalen Waddle is a complete yak guy. Rondell Moore, you know, his yak ability is absolutely off the charts. Kadarius Toney, another yak guy. You know, you look at Diami Brown of North Carolina. He's got dynamic yards after catch ability. This is a guy that can get Amari Rodgers, top five in yards after the catch over the last 4 years in college football. He's a perfect fit for the RPO offense. Elijah Moore, another yak guy. You just go through Tutu Atwell. There's another one. You just go all the way down to Philly. Tamorian Terry. You know, Shy Smith of South Carolina. These are yak. Dwayne Eskridge, who's on the Dolphins roster at the Senior Bowl. Marcus Stevenson of Houston. You know, these are all big yak guys. So, you know, that's what the Dolphins need more than anything is people who can create after the catch because they just don't have it. So, you know, I think there will be a real rebuild of this unit via free agency and the draft. You know, I could see us coming out of the draft with at least two receivers and maybe more, you know, depending on what happens in free agency. But I just don't think you can go into the season with the same guys because it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and watching Buffalo, it's interesting, you know, how many myths get dispelled as teams win. Everybody said you can't go out and buy yourself an elite unit. Well, the Jaguars proved that that was nonsense when they bought an entire defense. They used a couple of high draft picks, and then they bought the rest of their defense. They had one of the top defenses in the NFL. They made the AFC Championship game. The Buffalo Bills bought
the second best receiver in football, along with Devontae Adams, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens. You know, you can do it. And the Bills, they needed a slot guy. They went out and got Cole Beasley, one of the better slot guys in football. They wanted a deep threat. They went in and got John Brown. They traded for Stephon Diggs. That worked out. So it can be done. And all of that was done in relatively one offseason. So it can be done.
But I thought Miami very much bought a defense. Yeah. Why aren't we talking about that?
With, yeah, Byron Jones, Kyle Van Noy.
And Kyle Van Noy and the, Ogba. Emmanuel Ogba and Shaq Lawson.
If you go back and, a year, you know, Eric
I mean,
Rowe.
They basically bought – I mean, these were key players. This awful defense 1 year ago, right, last in the league, became – you know, they didn't end the season as the top defense in the league, but, you know, they were for most of the season the top defense in the league.
All right, Simon, to wrap up the wide receivers, Isaiah Ford, Mac Hollins, both are free agents. They both walk, or does Mac Hollins have some usefulness as a special teamer, bottom of the roster special guy?
Special teams captain, but, you know, you can probably find better. Isaiah Ford is done.
Mm-hmm. Tend to agree. Chris, Mac Hollins makes it?
I mean, he might be invited back.
But not a roster guy.
We'll see, you know. It's going to be tough. They asked him. They asked him to step up. They asked him to step up, and he couldn't catch the ball.
No,
that's
he could not. Line. Yeah. Bottom line is that if you play wide receiver, you might be asked to catch the ball. That's that's important, right?
Right.
Our favorite, just to close it out. I know I said we were going to close it out, but you know we're a fan of this guy. Did we witness the end of Jakeem Grant this year? I'll go to Chris first.
No, I don't think so. He's signed long-term and he is second team all pro as a returner. He's going to be on the team. If you're on the team and you're active on game day and you're a wide receiver, you're probably going to end up out there. And when you have the speed to, you know, run what Tua lovingly called brotherhood routes.
Yeah.
Then, you know, and depending on who else you have on the roster. I think the really problem is that they have nobody other than Grant on the roster who can actually run.
Yes.
You know, nobody. and so that's the real issue there. So yeah, he's going to be on the field at times. He's going to, you know, he's the return man and he's one of the league's best return men. and he signed long term. He signed through like 2023 or something like that. I mean, it's yeah, he's gonna be here unless they trade him or something.
Yeah, Simon, no surprises, right? He makes it.
Oh, well, Jakeem makes the team.
Yeah, he comes back next year.
Yeah, he'll be back, but I don't know if he makes the team.
Okay, so there is doubt.
Yeah. There's doubt for me. Okay. But then I said this time last year, or coming into camp, that I thought he might struggle. It might be a shock. He might be one of the guys that falls off the edge of the roster. I just don't think he's done enough. He's not getting any better.
No.
You know, he's a great return guy, but how often, how many return touchdowns were there in the NFL this year? Under 10, I think.
He had one of them.
I know he had one of them, but, that's one. Does the one return touchdown account for all the other stuff? He gets hurt. He drops passes. He's inconsistent. He has great play speed, but it doesn't show. He has great speed, but it doesn't show up as play speed.
Decent gimmick player, I would say. Those end arounds are money with him.
No, I think I totally disagree with the play speed. I think his play speed is phenomenal. His play speed is phenomenal. He can't catch the ball. That's the problem. The ball looks like a beach ball in his hands. I mean, he's tiny.
If you had the speed that he had, you'd be throwing it deep to him all the time. And, I just don't think he can get open. I just don't think he's, he looks like Tarzan, plays like.
He gets open all the time on all 22. All 22, he is open all the friggin' time. It's that he's so small, it's hard to find him. It really is. I mean, because you gotta layer the ball in, right? It's not as easy as just throwing a guy, right?
What's the excuse for Tyreek Hill then? Because he's pretty small too.
Well, first off, you got a guy with an absolute howitzer on his shoulders throwing the ball 60 yards down the field. But surely if
you've got a howitzer, that doesn't matter if you can find. It's about finding him.
He is, first off, he's bigger. He is bigger than Jakeem Grant. There is a difference between 5'6" and 5', nine or whatever.
5 foot eight and an eighth.
Yeah, 5'8". I mean, Jakeem Grant is 5'6". Yeah. I think there's a difference there. I mean, we would say there's a difference between a 6'0" guy and a 6'2" guy, wouldn't we not? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
no, in the body types. In the body types.
In a wide receiver, we would say the one is lengthy and the other is not. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so. I think there is a difference. There is a difference there. But he is getting open all the time. He just can't friggin' catch the ball. And you're gonna live with it. I mean, you're gonna live with like one out of 5 or something like that times that you go to him, and it's just this bad drop. Like, they look really bad. And again, these small guys, they turn me off now, because when I'm watching like a Rondale Moore or something like that, he looks like one of these small guys where the ball looks big in their hand. It looks like a friggin' beach ball, and they have trouble. They really have trouble at the catch point controlling it and hauling it in. And I think Jakeem Grant is there. I think Rondale Moore is there. I think one of the reasons that Tutu Atwell is unique as a prospect is because he's smaller, 5 foot the along that 5'9" route or area. But he's got nice big hands and he has control of the football. He used to be a quarterback. I mean, he was a dual threat quarterback in Miami for high school. I mean, he has control of the football. I think some of those other tiny guys, that's where they really fall short. And if injuries and the inability to catch the ball are going to do Jakeem in, that's what's going to happen. And the fact that he's so small that it is hard to layer the football into him against a defense when you it's not just straight line. You're not just shooting lasers, right? Mm-hmm. You got people in front of you. You got people at different depths of zone, and it can be tough to get the ball to an especially tiny. He's like a Smurf, so it's it's a shame, but it is what it is. But it's not his play speed. His play speed is phenomenal, and he's getting open all the time. I mean, you even look at the stuff like Next Gen Stats and stuff like that. They show that he has the most separation of any receiver, on the targets that he has and the catches that he has. I mean, he creates separation. It's just it's just a shame that he's not bigger.
Yeah, he
can't say now. He won't make the team next year.
Maybe they make a calculus about his contract is too expensive to be a return specialist. But he is, you know, he's the second team All-Pro returner. I'd be surprised if he's just summarily dismissed, you know?
Yeah, and Jakeem Grant, Malcolm Perry, Lynn Bowden, and you can make the case that they have three gimmick guys, and you don't need three.
Yeah.
Bowden's better.
Yeah, so.
Bowden was totally unexciting to me. They put the ball in his hands a lot in some of those final weeks, and I thought that if it wasn't Tua making a ridiculous throw like in that Chiefs game, that, you know, otherwise it was just kind of unexciting. I mean, he's not very fast. He's got great hands. No, he really does. He's that's where you got to give him credit. He's got really good hands for, you know, quarterback convert. But otherwise it was totally unexciting. I can see why they're going to look at Curtis Samuel. You know, I can see why they're going to look at Tutu Atwell. I can see why they're going to look at Jalen Waddle.
They want a real version of those three guys.
And right? A real version of Lynn Bowden, not Lynn Bowden.
Yes. Lynn Bowden, if you're listening to this, you're probably not a fan and you're probably leaving us a very nasty review on iTunes.
Okay. Go like and retweet some more Deshaun Watson stuff.
I like him.
Yes. Look, I like him as
maybe
a player.
Maybe he'll go to the Texans.
I like him as a player, but I'll push Lynn Bowden off a cliff for Curtis Samuel. Okay.
Yeah.
I just would. I don't need to see more. Like I'm pretty certain that Curtis Samuel is going to give me everything I want from Lynn Bowden. Now, how expensive will Curtis Samuel be? That's a different calculation, and that's something that you have to weigh, of course, right?
Tough.
But that's a tough one. Three gimmick players, I think it's three too many, and two might be too many, to be honest with you, especially if they're going to draft a wide receiver and then sign one. So moving on to the offensive line, I think that this is the year we finally replace Jesse Davis, and if they don't replace Jesse Davis, then they didn't do much on the offensive line. Is that fair, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I think Davis and probably I keep wanting to call him Ted Karras, but that's not his name, is it? But I think I keep mixing him up with the guy that we had before.
God, Daniel Kilgore.
Daniel
Kilgore.
Anyway, no, don't worry.
Ted Karras is very much an offensive lineman on the team.
Yeah, no, I know he is, but yeah, just ignore that. But yeah, I think Karras would be a great backup at all three interior spots. But you'd like to see him be replaced. And Jesse Davis, I think, you know, would just be, and whether that's, you know, you're drafting a right tackle, Abraham Lucas, that kind of guy, or the big kid over at Oklahoma State, Tevin Jenkins, and you're kicking Robert Hunt inside, who knows? And then, you know, you're bringing in a Creed Humphrey or a Landon Dickerson or a kid at Ohio State, or, you know, depends, you know, if they're going to move to the zone scheme, then it's the kid at Stanford, you know, Dahlman. But, yeah, I think, and the questions as well about Ereck Flowers. You know, he played, he played okay. You know, I don't think that
he had a good season, but good God, those last two games were bad.
Yeah,
post injury, he was. I think he was awful.
Yes,
and post injury,
and awful is being kind.
I don't think he was healthy though.
He wasn't healthy.
Clear the ankle was an issue.
You know, but the thing is, I didn't think he was awesome pre-injury. So
no, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, yeah, it was but, okay.
You know, what's the deal with Austin Jackson? You know, does he stay at left tackle? Can he, you know, do you move him to right tackle if you draft Penei Sewell? You know, are you that interested in a Christian Darrisaw or a Rashawn Slater or a Liam Eikenberg? Or, you know, do you want another left tackle? I mean, it feels like you don't give up the 18th pick on a left tackle if you're then going to draft another one the following year. Because I thought Jackson played pretty decently for a rookie. I thought Hunt played pretty decently. I thought Kindy was a mini revelation at times, you know. But, you know, is Solomon Kindley the style of guard that they're looking for if they are going to transition to a zone scheme? Because he doesn't really fit. He's not a zone, you know, he's a power guy. You know, so then you're looking at Elijah Vera Tucker at USC or those kind of guys. But it'd be interesting. And I don't think we can answer any questions about the offensive line until we know what the scheme is and whether or not it's going to be, you know, one of those. Because if it was Mike McDaniel, the 49ers run game coordinator, then, you know, unless he's going to make a fairly big transition from something that he's run for years, which is a zone scheme, one cut and go, to a power system, which is what we run essentially, then
it would be that would be intriguing. But I think you can't make any hard and fast decisions on the offensive line until we know who's the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and if you look at the entire group, they're all under contract except Julian Davenport, but I'm pretty certain none of us want him back. But everybody's under contract, so those decisions are going to have to be made as far as cutting or trading some of these guys if they're going to fit in new personnel.
Simon, I wonder if you're thinking of Nate Garner, like with Jesse Davis? Like, were you trying to compare him to that?
Let me,
because I confuse him with that all the time. Nate Garner, but
if Jesse Davis is starting next year, they didn't do much on the offense.
It's time for him to not be a starter anymore. I think he's under contract.
Ted Larson, that's who I keep mistaking him.
Oh, Ted Larson. Okay, gotcha. Oh boy, yeah, I can see why you confuse that. I don't think he's going to be starting anymore. The more interesting question to me is not so much about Jesse Davis, it's about Robert Hunt. And what did you see in him at right tackle? We knew that he was going to be given the opportunity to win that right tackle job. Simon said that, he, before the season started, before anything, was really clear, that you heard that he was going to be given the opportunity to win that right tackle job. And he was. Okay, opportunity was given. Did he do it? That's the question. And I think that with the Tua Tagovailoa at quarterback, the stakes are kind of high, right? This is a higher stakes decision, I think, than normal. And it's not just because of the left-handed thing, although that plays into it. So does he move inside to right guard? Does he continue on at right tackle? That's a really big question. I think that there's going to be opportunity in this offseason. I look at the free agents, and number one, you see Taylor Moton as an unrestricted free agent. And that's one thing. I don't know if he necessarily fits as, moving toward a zone scheme, but he could certainly nail down the right tackle position and have you feeling safer about that. So that's something to consider. What I would look at is the New Orleans Saints. They went for it all this year, one last go, and they didn't make it. So now they find themselves nearly $100 million over the salary cap. And with not very many, easy ways to lop off a lot of that cap room. I hear that the situation with Drew Brees' contract and voidable years is actually worse than it looks on paper or on Spotrac or something like that. So they've got two guys that are fifth year option guys. They're right tackle Ryan Ramczyk and corner Marshawn Lattimore. They're going to be playing for $10-11 million or $11 and $10 million respectively. This year on the fifth year option, but it's an 11 and 10 million. That's clean. It's not, it's just salary. There's no acceleration or anything. So if they were to get rid of those guys, then they just get to trade those guys away. They get to just wipe $20 million off their books, and they may need to do that. And so if you're the Miami Dolphins and you call up the New Orleans Saints, your good friend, Chris Greer's good friend, Jeff Ireland, and says, Hey, I'll give you this for Ryan Ramczyk. I know you guys are in a bad way and you guys are going to need to, this isn't pruning of the salary cap that needs to be done. This is lighting your roster on fire. I'll take them, give them something decent, worthwhile and make sure, that other teams don't outbid you on it. And I think you can get him. He's 28 years old. He is clearly one of the best right tackles in the business and has been for years. And he fits the zone really well. So you would not only sleep well at night thinking about Tua's right side, the blind side for him. You would sleep well at night knowing that Tua is protected. You would sleep well at night also knowing that you got a guy who's going to help you transition, because it does look like they're going to transition to a zone scheme. It may not be the most religious of zone schemes like Mike McDaniel would have run, but it's going to be in some fashion that I think. So you got a guy that helps you in two fronts that way. You got multiple ways. Having a better run game is going to help Tua. Having a better pass protection is going to help Tua. I think it would just be a home run to do is getting Ryan Ramczyk. But the other thing that they're going to have to do, and you mentioned Ted Karras, if they're going to convert to this scheme, then they, you know, Ted Karras is a free agent. So it's not going to be, it's not like they'd have to make a tough decision cutting him or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they're going to have to figure that, that position out. And I know that they headed into the season knowing that that center, or hoping that the center position was the one thing that they had left to really get to. And so I wonder how big they're going to go on that position. Are they going to go as big as, you know, can they pursue Corey Linsley? Simon, you said is the best center in the league right now. Mm-hmm. Can they go after Creed Humphreys, who they're going to coach at the Senior Bowl? Will they go for a Drew Dalman at Stanford, who, if they get Pep Hamilton, Stanford guy, David Shaw guy, you know, zone perfect for it. He would absolutely fit it like glove. Could Chris Dalman's son, by the way, I don't know if anybody knows Chris Dalman, the, you know, I don't know if he was all pro, but he was definitely one of the best offensive linemen in the league for a long time. Could they go after him? How big are they going to go at the center position? I don't think it's something we talk about that much. And I think that it's going to be probably, like, you know, if not necessarily priority one on offense, it might be a priority two. And it might be like a sneaky priority two that we didn't really see coming.
Yeah. Speaking of Ted Larson, do you know where he is, Simon?
Arizona, isn't he?
Nope. He didn't play this season, but he didn't play a couple of weeks ago for Tampa Bay. Off the street, stepped in and played 38 snaps in the wild card game against the Washington football team. So Ted Larson came off the street to play in a playoff game and evidently played well. He did not allow a sack. So, all right, on the way out here, next week we're going to get into the defense. I think we covered the offensive side of the ball. Like I said at the top of the show, yes, that a lot of work needs to be done on this side of the ball. And if you watch these teams this weekend, you will notice, yeah, we don't have that. Not what those teams have on the offensive side of the ball. On the way out here, Simon, who plays in the Super Bowl?
The Buffalo Bills and the Green Bay Packers.
Oof. I already know one of us is pretty upset about you picking Buffalo. Chris,
I wasn't until this week, right? I was hoping Buffalo would beat the Ravens because I freaking hate the Ravens. But now that they're playing the Chiefs, I mean, I get to be 100% AFC East hater on the Buffalo Bills, and that's refreshing.
Is it going to happen, though?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Of course it will.
All right.
So you think the Buffalo Bills are going to be, well, Simon thinks they're going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't see it.
Yeah. The Bills didn't look all that great this past week, but all of a sudden their defense, you know, came alive.
And everybody's waiting for that, right, with the Bills? Like the Cinderella clock strikes midnight on this uber-productive offense.
Yes,
that Josh Allen has been commanding, you know, with uncanny accuracy that people never thought he had. You know, I think everybody's waiting for the clock to strike midnight on it, and I wonder if this poor showing, you know, on offense in the last week kind of starts putting doubt in their minds, like it starts creeping in.
Maybe that's possible. Although I will say this, the streak continues. No team in NFL history had won 7 games in a row by 6 points or less until the Chiefs did it. Now it's 8 games. So I think the streak reaches 9 because I think that game's going to be close. And I do have the Chiefs winning. So Chiefs win by a field goal.
You know what Buffalo. That reminds me of, Alf, though? It reminds me of, do you remember the Peyton Manning Colts? Do you remember, like, some of those Colts teams that were just, like, phenomenal? You know, 15-1.
Yeah.
Great offense, you know, just.
Jim Caldwell.
Yeah. And then summarily escorted out of the playoffs, right? It was sort of like they were front runners. They were really good front runners. Then the next year, the year that they actually won the Super Bowl, they weren't front runners anymore. They gutted out tough games and close games and did it consistently. And I don't know if it was, I mean, they might not have gotten to that six or seven in a row, but there were a lot of games that they, I mean, so you knew that they were good front runners, right? You know, they're the guys that could lay on 35 points and just, you know, take advantage if it happens that way. But finding out that your team is also good enough that when you get punched in the mouth, like, you can respond and win the tough games consistently and come out on top, I think that says something about the team that, you know, maybe gets underrated a little bit. And maybe I'm wrong and the Chiefs, you know, fucking suck. But I think it actually says something about the dimensions of that team that maybe wasn't even there a year ago.
Yeah. And watching Chad Henne running around and making all those passes, like, I don't remember him looking that good in a Dolphin uniform for that matter. But, you know, it tends to help that you have those weapons, right, in Kansas City. Because he looked like a different guy. And it was hilarious how after the game, Andy Reid kept saying that this is going to go down in Chiefs lore. We're going to remember the run, the catch, and the throw by Chad Henne. But, yeah, I expect Patrick Mahomes to play. It's all over the internet right now, if you go look at it, that, yeah, Patrick Mahomes will play. So, yeah, I think the Chiefs eke it out, and we get the Super Bowl we want. That everybody wants, well, at least everybody outside of Buffalo and Tampa Bay. But we want Green Bay, Kansas City, and I think we'll get it. All right, that's it. There is no more. Next week, we'll talk defense. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.